verse of anything. Reason I backed up. A lot of our folks were on spring break last week, and so we covered about 10 chapters while you were gone. Finished the book of Joshua, so I'm going to take about 2 or 3 minutes to maybe back up, and that will also give us a setting for what's happening with the children of Israel as the book of Judges opens. We talked about last Sunday all the tribes actually moving into the land and occupying their particular parcel of land. And we noted there were about 9.5 tribes on the west side. Beginning down in the south, you've got Simeon embedded in Judah. You've got Benjamin, Dan, just to the north. The pink is Ephraim, Manasseh, or the half-tribe of Manasseh that's over here. Then you've got Issachar, Zebulun, Asher, and Naphtali. Those are the tribes that are now on the west side of Jordan. Of course, we've got Reuben, Gad, and half-tribe of Manasseh on the east side. So they have also set up the tabernacle at Shiloh, somewhere in this area here, and that is be their place of worship. All the major battles have been won at this particular time, and so Joshua calls the 40,000 men who have been over on the west side helping conquer some of the land over there and helping the tribes move in. He calls them together and gives them a word of praise, really, thanking them for keeping their commitment, for coming over and helping the tribes on the west side. And as they're about to go home, he actually gives a blessing to them. And so these 40,000 men, they head back home. And on the way, as they cross the Jordan, they built an altar. And of course, when the people on the west side heard that they had built an altar over on the east side, they were pretty upset about it. Some of them wanted to go to war right off the bat. But calmer heads prevailed. They went and talked about the situation and found out that really it was similar to the stones that had been carried out of the Jordan. These people said, the Jordan is separating us, but we want this to be a witness to our children that we are in fact still part of Israel. So that problem went away. Now Joshua is about ready to die, and he calls the elders and the people together, and he gives them his farewell address, so to speak. And he reminds them that God had kept every promise that he had made to them. He said not one thing has failed that God has promised that he would do for you. He said, now, remember, you are to remain faithful. And as long as you are faithful, then he's going to continue to be with you. Well, they actually make a covenant. Chapter 24, the men come together and they said, pretty much like they had said at Sinai, whatever the Lord says, we will serve him, we will obey. Well, as the book of Joshua ends, we see Joshua dying. Also, Eleazar, the high priest, has died, and his son Phinehas is now serving as the high priest. There's also one thing that happened that was initiated all the way back in Egypt. Joseph, before he died, he said, now someday, God's going to take you out of this country. And he said, carry my bones with you. So we see in the last couple of three verses of the book of Joshua that the bones of Joseph are carried and buried up in the land of Ephraim in the tomb of his father. Now, so it seems that everything is going okay. In fact, there's a commentary, or I would say the summary of what happened under the rule of Joshua and some of the days of the elders that lived during his time. Look at Joshua chapter 24 and verse 31. Joshua 24 and verse 31. It said, and Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders that overlived Joshua and which had known all the works of the Lord that he had done for Israel. So up to this point, they're following God's command. But all the work is not done. And we'll go back to the first slide now. God had said, we're not going to drive everybody out one time, because if you do, the wild animals are going to take over the country. That's in Deuteronomy chapter 7, verses 24 and 5, somewhere along there. So now is the time for the Israelites to go in and start rooting out these pockets of the Canaanite nations who were still living among them at this particular time. Now, this is not a new command. God's told them more than once. Even when they were about to come into the land the first time, back in Exodus chapter 23, he says, now you need to drive out all these inhabitants, because if you don't, they will become a snare to you. And as they arrive 40 years later on the plains of Moab, we see at least three times in the speeches of Moses recorded in these chapters, they're encouraged again. Go in, drive out the inhabitants, destroy the idols, destroy the groves, whatever has to do with the idolatrous nation. So, we find that, though we noticed this last Sunday, that some of these people, even they were a little bit lax, even to go into the land to start with. In Joshua chapter 18, verse 3, seven of these tribes, they were basically sitting on their duff, we'd say. And Joshua has to get after them. He says, go on in and possess the land that God has given to you. And I guess that's no surprise that Joshua, in his farewell address that I mentioned earlier, goes over this same thing. Look back at chapter 23, Joshua chapter 23, verses 9 through about 13. So this is his final admonition. Verse 9, he says, for the Lord hath driven out from before you great nations and strong. But as for you, no man hath been able to stand before you unto this day. One man of you shall chase a thousand, for the Lord your God, he it is that fighteth for you, as he has promised you. Take good heed therefore unto yourselves, that ye love the Lord your God, else, if you do in any wise go back and cleave unto the remnant of these nations, even these that remain among you, and shall make marriages with them, and go in unto them, and they to you, know for a certainty that the Lord your God will no more drive out any of these nations from before you, but they shall be snares and traps unto you, and scourges in your sides, and thorns in your eyes, until you perish from off this good land, which the Lord your God hath given you. So, that's his farewell address. So as we get to the opening of the book of Judges, it appears that everything is still going according to what is required. I think the nation of Judah, the tribe of Judah, if they had just thought about some of the things that have been said concerning them in the past, they may have said, okay, well, we're going to be the first ones to go and start driving these people out. Because even back in Genesis, as Jacob was about to die, he basically tells Judah, your tribe is going to be the one that will be in the leadership role in the years to come. Well, we also know that if you look at Numbers chapter 2 and verse 9, when they were journeying about on the way to the promised land through the years of wandering and so forth, what tribe moved out first when they started to move the tabernacle? The tribe of Judah. So this has been going on as was predicted or prophesied in the book of Genesis. But I'm going to say this, to their credit, they didn't go on past history. Look at verse 1. What do? It says, after the death of Joshua, it came to pass that the children of Israel asked the Lord, who shall go up for us against the Canaanites first to fight against them. So it looks like at this point in time they are intent on following after what God wants them to do. And, of course, the Lord in verse 2 answers them. It said, Judah shall go up, and behold, I have delivered the land into his hand. So as Judah begins this cleansing of the land, they say to their people who are living, and I pointed out, Simeon is interspersed. They have a block of land inside the property of territory of Judah. They say, now, when we're fighting the remnant in our area, you come and help us. And if we're fighting some that are in your block of the neck of the woods, so to speak, we'll help you. So that's the kind of a joint activity that Judah and Simeon put together as this cleansing begins. Then the next few verses, verses 4 through about 8, it talks about some of the first activity. And I'm going to show this next chart here. It's not there yet, is it? Okay. Bezek is the area there. And is the next slide. Oh, doesn't tell me. But also Jerusalem is there. So these are the two areas that are hit first by the tribes of Judah and Simeon. It talks about in verse 4 that Judah going up and the Lord delivering them, the Canaanites and the Perizzites, into their hands, and they slew about 10,000 of them at Bezek, the area that I pointed to. Now, it seems as if this Adonai Bezek, listed in verse 7 or verse 6, he may have, and I say may have, because it's really not clear, he may have put together a coalition of forces, because it talks about Canaanites, Perizzites, and so forth. And they are fighting against Judah and Simeon. There is a possibility, and I say possibility because of what is said in verse 8. Look at verse 8. It said, now the children of Judah had fought against Jerusalem and had taken it and smitten it with the edge of the sword and set this city on fire. So I'm saying there is a possibility that the battle began down in Judah, because, I mean, that's the people that's driving them out, or they're trying to drive out. So the battle may have gone up through Jerusalem, on up, and the final battle may have occurred up at Bezek. We don't know. But whether that be the case or not, we know that when they got to Bezek, up in the land of Manasseh, that this king tries to escape, but they catch him and they cut his thumbs and his big toes off. Now look at what his response was in verse 7. We'd say, well, I finally got what's coming to me with it yet. He said, I've done the same thing to 70 other kings. So possibly the Lord is just paying me back for what I've done. But and that's the reason I said he may have been leading a coalition, because a man who has conquered 70 other kings has to be a pretty strong person. So, but anyway, he is carried back to Jerusalem where he dies. Right. Yeah. How much can you do with these four fingers without a thumb? And how fast can you run if you don't have a big toe? You're basically useless in terms of physical capability. So it was, he said, I'm getting what I deserve. But they go back down to Jerusalem, or carry him back to Jerusalem, and that's where he dies. Yeah. So, after that battle is over, we see them, coming back down into their own territory, down in the southern part of Judah, and they are fighting some battles down that way. And this seems to be, in fact, I'm sure it is a retelling of the story that was recorded back in Joshua chapter 15. Because it talks about Caleb, who we know was one of the spies, and he had inherited a land down in the southern part around Hebron, the land of the giants. Now he asked for some help. You go back to Joshua 15:13, there's a detailed discussion. He said, I need some help, in some of the battles I'm fixing to take on. And he said, whoever steps up and helps me, then I'm going to give this young man a wife. I'm going to give him one of my daughters as a wife. So Othniel, who, by the way, happens to be his nephew, he's a son of Caleb's younger brother, he steps up and takes on the role of helping his now father-in-law, and they go in and defeat the people they're fighting against. And she asked for a particular piece of land where there were numerous springs, and she was given that. Now, next we find a group of people called the Kenites joining up and helping Judah as they attack another town down in the southern part, and there is a map. I won't move there. But it's in that same general area. And not only do they help Judah in that attack, but they actually come and live down in that area with the tribe of Judah. Now, there's a question up there. Does anybody remember who the Kenites were? If you go back to Genesis chapter 15, we're going to find out these Kenites actually were one of the nations that were living on the land that God promised to Abraham that his descendants would occupy someday. So Kenites have been around a long time. Genesis chapter 15, verses 18, 19. In fact, the Kenites are the first of 10 nations that was occupying a piece of property. So they've been at one time in the land of Canaan. Now, we also know, where is all these slides at? There's one or two missing. Also, if you look at chapter 4, Judges, the lesson we'll cover next Sunday, there is a reference there to a man by the name of Heber, who is a Kenite. And if you follow that story on through, you will see that his wife, Jael, actually helps Israel defeat a Canaanite general by driving a nail through his head. So these people not only are joining and coming and living, part of them with Judah down in their territory, but according to this verse there in chapter 4 and verse 11, one of them actually moved back up to the north. It said up to Kadesh, which is up in the land of Naphtali, where one of the cities of refuge is at. And so that alliance that is talked about here continues there. And then also we know in 1 Samuel chapter 15, when Saul goes out to defeat the Amalekites, or supposed to defeat the Amalekites, that he sends warning to the Kenites who were living among the Amalekites and says, separate yourself out, because we come in and we're going to destroy these people. So this relationship that is existing at this particular time, that's referred to in chapter 1 of Judges, verse 16, exists for many years beyond this particular point. And, right. Yeah. You got my thunder, Jeff. No, you're right. Now, Jeff says they're related to Jethro. If you go back to Numbers 10, verses 28 through about 32, we'll find exactly what Jeff mentions. There was a fellow by the name of Hobab, who was the son of Reuel, the father-in-law of Moses, who Moses said, now if you will, when we get ready to move from Sinai, you go with us and you be our eyes, because you are from this part of the country, be our guide, so to speak. So he kind of resists to start with, but apparently after Moses says, now whatever good thing happens to us as Israelites, if you'll go with us, those same good things will happen to you. So all this relationship that we're talking about now, the Kenites, came about just what Jeff said here. It's because Moses married into this group of folks. These were his in-laws, so to speak. And sometimes, you know, when we marry, we don't know what we're getting into. You know, look at Ruth. She has to put up with my folks. And I have to put up with hers. That's just the way marriage works. So, again, these people are related to Moses through marriage. But it is a kind of interesting concept. And if you look at, and I don't have the scripture up there, but there is a statement in, there's a term in chapter 4 that refers to Hobab, the father-in-law of Moses. Now we know that Moses' father-in-law was called Jethro. He was called Reuel, Raguel. Now whether or not he had a name, Hobab, I don't know, but apparently he must have. But I know he had a son by the name of Hobab, because in Numbers chapter 10, it's very specific. Hobab, the son of Reuel, the Midianite, the father-in-law of Moses. So, okay, we probably beat that to death. All right. Now, after that particular battle, they still remain down in the southern part. And this Hormah is actually inside the property of Simeon. So, there, again, this joining of Judah and Simeon is still taking place. So they utterly destroy that city, and then they go over on the coastline and begin to attack some of the cities of the Philistines, some at Gaza, Ashkelon, Ekron. Now, there's some good things and some bad things that said about that particular deal. In verse 19 of chapter 1, it said they successfully drove them out of the mountains. Howsoever, it says, but they could not drive them out of the lowlands because of the iron chariot. Now, what does that tell us about that? Why were they not able to drive them out? Was it the... Now, God said, I'm going to be with you. I'm going to fight for you. You mean God can't handle iron chariots? I don't think we could conclude that at all, can we? This may have been the first indication of a lack of faith on these people's part. That God had been with them. He had driven out giants. He had torn down walls, cities. Whatever was required, he had done it, as long as they trusted in him. So this is kind of not a good sign in terms of what's happening to the children of Israel. Now, we shift on and we find out there's some other issues on the horizon. Benjamin couldn't drive out the inhabitants of the Jebusites from the city of Jerusalem. You recall, as we talked about the dividing of the land last Sunday, the land of Judah came up to the southern tip of the city of Jerusalem. but the city itself was in the property of Benjamin. Now, we had noticed already in Judges chapter 8 that it said the children of Judah, they fought against the city of Jerusalem. They took it. They burned it. So what's the big deal here? That's another one of those things where you may have to do a little bit of speculation. Possibility. That's right. That's what had to happen. Right? They may have gone through it, done the damage, went on maybe up to Bezek that we talked about earlier. Jebusites moved out. When these guys go back down south to their property, then the Jebusites move in. And we know from other biblical passages that the Jebusites inhabited the city of Jerusalem all the way until David drove them out. 2 Samuel chapter 5, verses 6 through 10. So we're talking 300 years maybe from this point. That's how long the Jebusites occupied the city of Jerusalem before they were actually driven out. Okay. Now, talk a little bit about the house of Joseph, Ephraim and Manasseh. We find out that Ephraim goes against the fight against the people of the city of Bethel. And they send some spies out. They're trying to find out how to get into the city and destroy the city. So they find a man coming out and they said, okay, if you'll show us the entrance to the city, then we're going to show mercy to you when we take the city. And that exactly, what happens. It says this man, he moved to the land of the Hittites and he builds him a city and names it the same as what Bethel had been named, back under the time when, Jacob is leaving home as a result of that. Exactly where the Hittite country is, we don't know other than there's a map. Could be way north, could even be back over where Moses come from. But I know the map that I had I'd start with, the Hittites did live to the north of Naphtali and Asher and so forth. So possibly he just went to the north from there. But whatever the situation was, we would say he got out of Dodge. He didn't hang around after that massacre. So Manasseh, though, there's two or three verses there toward the end of chapter 1 talking about Manasseh and some more about Ephraim, about not being able to drive out the inhabitants of a number of the cities in their territories. And some of those cities, we know where they're at. A couple of them labeled there in the center. Also, Megiddo is up there. Beth Shan may be over here. And then Ephraim, down in Ephraim, there's Gezer. So they were not able to drive these inhabitants out, but at times, because it says, when Israel was strong, then these people were forced to pay tribute or work as slaves. So again, even though they've having some successes early on, there's a lot of failures going on. And as we get to the end of chapter 1, there's nothing good to be said about the rest of the tribes. There's not even a mention made of Issachar, the tribe sitting just to the southwest of the Sea of Galilee. But all these other tribes, Zebulun, Asher, Naphtali, Dan, none of these were able to drive out the inhabitants. In fact, there's some statements made that they just kind of dwelt among the people. So, but it's like, yeah. In fact, if you look back at, in some of the books of Joshua, it talks about particularly Manasseh and also Ephraim making them slaves and so forth. Right. Could be. So they just kind of let these people remain in the land, use them as slaves, and so forth. But even there's one tribe, Dan, and we talked about this last week. They don't even drive them out. In fact, the Amorites run them out, and they have to go up here to the north. There's the Hittites I was speaking of. Dan, they go up to the north. And we know also that later on, the Phoenicians controlled this whole area, about half of what is now Asher. So there's some failures, a lot of failures going on. But if you look at the last verse of chapter 1, it does seem that some of the land may have been captured, retaken from the Amorites, maybe by children of Ephraim or whatever, but not very much of it. We get to chapter 2, and don't know whether we got time. Has the bell rung yet? We find the real sad story beginning. It said, an angel came from Gilgal, this area here, Gilgal, and it had a bad message that they wanted, it needed to pass on to these people. Said, I'm the one, the Lord brought you up out of Egypt, brought you into this land which I swear unto your fathers, and I said, I will never break my covenant with you, and ye shall make no league with the inhabitants of this land. Ye shall throw down their altars, but ye have not obeyed my voice. Why have you done this? Wherefore, I also said, I will not drive them out from before you, but they shall be as thorns in your sides, and their God shall be a snare unto you. And it shall come to pass, when the angel of the Lord spake these words unto all the children of Israel, that the people lifted up their voice and wept. And they called the name of the place Bochim, and they sacrificed there to the Lord. Does that sound like what we just read in Joshua chapter 23, verse 9 through whatever? What did Joshua say? Else if you do in any wise go back, cleave unto these nations, these remnants of these nations, even these that remain among you, and shall make marriages with them, go in unto them, and they to you, know for a certainty that the Lord your God will no more drive out any of these nations from before you, but they shall be snares and traps unto you, and scourges in your sides, and thorns in your eyes, until you perish off of this good land which the Lord your God hath given you. So we are now ready to see some very sad years in the history of the nation of Israel. Fall away, God will send a deliverer. They will repent, live after him according to his will for a while. Go back into idolatry. And that cycle is going to take place for the next 300 or so years. And that's what we will be talking about beginning next Sunday. In fact, verse 10 of chapter 2 gives an introduction. It said, and also all that generation were gathered unto their fathers, And there arose another generation after them, which knew not the Lord, nor yet the works which he had done. So that's the commentary, right opposite from what was given in the days that Joshua died.